cohabitation itself doesn't really convey much information about commitment.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. We're pleased to welcome Dr. Scott Stanley as our guest today. Dr. Stanley is co-director of the Center for Marital and Family Studies at the University of Denver, is senior fellow for the Institute for Family Studies in Virginia, and is the co-author of the book A Lasting Promise. Dr. Stanley and his colleagues study marriage and romantic relationships, and we're going to be talking with him today about the latest research that they have done on cohabitation and why most experts consider living together outside of marriage as a pitfall for relationships, especially for couples who desire a long and lasting marriage. It's been about a year and a half since we had you on the show last, but just wanted to welcome you back to Family Policy Matters.
Well, thanks for having me back. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you with us. Now, cohabitation is increasingly popular among young people today, particularly millennials, and it seems that many young women and men view moving in together as simply a next step in a dating relationship. How common is cohabiting today, and in your opinion, why is it so popular, especially among younger folks?
I think it's become very common. So of the couples that will marry, let's say young couples marrying for the first time today, well, roughly 70% of them will have lived together before marriage. That doesn't actually even speak to just how prevalent it is now, because there's many other people that are increasingly likely never to get married, but who will have cohabited with a number of partners. So cohabitation has increased a lot. And I think the reason that it's increased is, you know, we went through this period of so much divorce and family instability and all that really started right around 1970 through the 70s into the 80s. And, you know, things leveled off a bit, but family instability became the norm. And people began, I think, to really fear marriage and the fear that marriage could work out. And cohabitation is perceived by people to be relatively without cost or risk, and I think that has made it very, very popular relative to marriage.
Well, Dr. Stanley, I know you've cautioned young people who want to have a lasting marriage to be careful about cohabiting because of its, and I quote, ambiguous nature. Tell us what you mean by that.
I think one of the biggest changes in the last 40 years in romantic relationships and how people do things before they settle down in marriage, and then, of course, for family development, is that relationships now are very ambiguous. And I believe that's motivated. I think people feel safer when things are ambiguous, almost as if our society has made a grand bargain, believing that, well, if it's not real clear what I actually want, if I don't make it real clear, I'm going to be hurt less if I don't get it, if things don't turn out. But you can see this in people wonder if, like, they're going to go out Friday night together in some way. Is it a date? That's ambiguous now, what a date is. Breaking up is ambiguous now. People do what I call soft breakups, where it's sort of not really clear that it's over and keep people on the back burner. Hookups, of course, are very ambiguous. And cohabitation itself is fundamentally, I think it's partly popular because it doesn't tend to require people to be really clear about commitment. And cohabitation, without knowing anything else about a couple, doesn't turn out to tell you anything about how committed they actually are to each other.
Well, what about cohabitation and the impacts that it has on men and women? I believe that you have stated that cohabitation may actually be worse for women in terms of the risks associated with it than it may be for men. I'll talk about that a little bit.
I think in terms of developing relationships, young adulthood, and romantic relationships, cohabiting, family formation, there is a difference that's substantial, and it stems from a very simple fact that women can get pregnant. Not all women, but, you know, mostly women can get pregnant and men can't. And that means there's a lot more at stake at times for women to get deeply involved or into a relationship that isn't very good, or where they start to get trapped, or where they make it prematurely, like in cohabitation, difficult to break up. Women have a lot more to lose if those things don't turn out well. And just one very specific example, unplanned pregnancies are much more common in cohabiting unions than in married unions. And unplanned pregnancy is a risk for the child, it's a risk for the woman, it's a risk for the relationship. But women especially being more likely than men to be taking care of children when a relationship has ended, and cohabiting relationships being much more likely to end than marriage, makes it a riskier proposition on average for women.
Oh, you've sort of touched on this already, but I know that many young people think that moving in together is often a signal of commitment. If it's that natural next step for the development of this relationship, then we're expressing a greater commitment to each other if we move in together, some might say. But what has your research taught you regarding the commitment levels and experience of most cohabiting couples?
Yeah, so let me make a conceptual point and then say a couple of research points. If I meet a couple for the first time, like at a party, or a person that's in a relationship and they're telling me about their relationship and I don't know anything else about them, if they tell me they're cohabiting, I don't really, like I said, I don't know anything about commitment. If they tell me they're engaged, I know a lot about commitment. If they tell me they're married, I know a lot about commitment. I may not know whether it's a good, healthy relationship or not, or, how well they get along, but cohabitation itself doesn't really convey much information about commitment. And this is where a lot of people get trapped, is that one person might be thinking that this really means something, that this means we're progressing toward marriage, whereas from a research standpoint, studies now with big data sets in the U.S. show that people who move in together as young adults now are more likely to break up than ever marry, whereas, even 20 years ago, if you had a couple that moved in together, they were pretty likely to then take the step toward marriage. So what a lot of people miss is that when you have an ambiguous relationship like cohabiting, if one person's thinking, well, this really means something about commitment, but they haven't talked about that and clarified it with the other, they could be really deceiving themselves. And finding what we see is that when people move in together and it's not real clear what the future is or what it means, the odds that one person is really pretty much more committed than the other is significant, and it's a lot higher. And sometimes people are fooling themselves thinking that because this person's willing to move in with me, they're going to commit to me.
I know that you've described cohabiting as more like cohabitating, and I like that term. Explain that for us, if you will, and how likely are most cohabiting couples to actually make it down the aisle to ultimately decide to get married?
Yeah, so I like that term too. I came up with it a couple years ago, and I like playing with words. And cohabitating is a great term because it describes what's really happened. So again, even 15, 20 years ago, cohabiting was for many a step toward marriage. And we've already transitioned through that as a society, where starting about 10 years or so ago, we really transitioned to the point where most people that live together will not get married. And in fact, for many people, when they move in with somebody, they may not be thinking this, but it's really going to be the start of living with maybe several different people before they finally settle down in marriage. Researchers call that serial cohabitation. And serial cohabitation is associated with really high risks for marriages not working out. There's a lot of complex reasons why that's the case, but part of the problem with cohabiting in general that people don't see is it makes it harder to break up. So a lot of times people are, this has just become sort of part of the dating scene now. They're doing something that actually is making it harder to break up long before they've made any clear decision or mutually clear and public decision as a couple that we're planning a life together. And that's risky. And so it doesn't turn out so well for a lot of people.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online, and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
So, Dr. Stanley, what impact does cohabiting have, of course, prior to marriage, on the quality of marriage for those cohabiting couples who ultimately do get married? And does it have an impact, based on your research, on the risk of divorce after that marriage takes place?
For decades, studies have shown that living together before marriage is associated with marriages not doing so well, the couples who do not live together before marriage. Now, that's changed somewhat in the last 15 years, and you'll hear researchers say now, well, there's no more risk associated with living together before marriage. That risk isn't there anymore. And that's not what we find, and we find over and over again in six published studies, different data sets. It's a very reliable finding that those who wait till marriage or who at least wait till they're engaged, and I'm making a research point here, not sort of a theological point, but those who wait till that question is settled, we're married or we're at least engaged, they look very different on average in marriages than the people that live together before there's that clarity and commitment to a future together. That's where the research is at. Now, I still think it's best for somebody to wait all the way to marriage because then things are totally clear. You know, people have gathered around you. They're supporting you as a couple. You've totally nailed down the commitment before you move in together. So, you know, I think that's really best for people. But it's also pretty clear that the highest risk, not dooming people, but much higher risk, is when people just move in together without clarifying anything and then eventually get married. Those marriages don't look as good on average.
Well, Dr. Stanley, what advice would you give young men and women who might be considering moving in together before marriage?
So here's some questions people could ask themselves. Whatever else they believe, they're really still thinking very seriously about moving in with somebody. One should ask themselves, am I really ready to make it harder to break up with this person? Why would that be better than dating without having the same place to live? Another great question is, this other person as committed to me as I am to them, or am I fooling myself about what that means for them versus what I'm thinking and feeling? Which relates to the next question, which is, have you talked about it with this person? What does it actually mean? Does it mean we're planning to get married? If it does mean we're planning to get married, does that mean we're ready to be engaged? Maybe you're going to wish you'd preserved the sense that when you move into marriage, it was this very clear transition. A lot of times when people are living together before marriage, even if many other things are fine about their relationship, their wedding day, they're often feeling a little melancholy that, wow, what's going to actually be different? What's the big transition? And that is a big transition, let me be clear. But it's not as big a transition as now we're really moving in together and starting life. And then the last question for the individual here is, those are all really important questions. If you're afraid to talk about those things, or even ask yourself those questions, much less talk with your partner, you're certainly not ready to move in with that person.
Well, I think those are great questions for folks to consider, absolutely. And I know that our listeners are maybe thinking, hey, those are some really good questions. I may know somebody who is considering moving in with somebody outside of a marriage relationship. And this is some information I'd really like to share with them because I think it is critically important because I really care about those individuals. Share with our listeners, if you would, before we leave, Dr. Stanley, where they can go to get more information about your research on cohabitation and marriage and other topics that you've studied.
Well, I write a lot about cohabitation on my blog, and people can search for sliding versus deciding. That'll get to me. I also written a number of important articles on cohabitation at the blog for the Institute for Family Studies. We have a little video on YouTube that's a four-minute video. It's called Relationship DUI. And people can just Google that or go to YouTube and look for Relationship DUI, and they might see something in that that they'd want to share with somebody that's grappling with these things right now in their life.
Well, excellent. Well, Dr. Scott Stanley, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters, for your great insight and research into marriage and cohabiting, and for sharing that with us and our listeners. So I know that these resources will be of great help to our listeners and to many of their friends and family members. So listeners, I want to encourage you to avail yourselves of that information. And with that, Dr. Scott Stanley, I want to thank you so much again for joining us on Family Policy Matters.
Thanks so much, John. I really appreciate the time.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. to listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.